FIC confirms the expansion of FIC's mandate and also provides guidance on implementation in relation to the implementation of security council resolutions, which would be a new function for the FIC. So currently the FIC guidance providing capacity is limited to the FIC Act itself, and compliance with the FIC Act, and this would expand the function in relation to the implementation of those sanctions. We didn't receive any comments on this also either.
All right, anything else? Clause? Yes, Davis?
I wonder if you could just give us a practical kind of example of when it is you require the authority in Clause CA. My reservations about Clause 3B stand, but we'll deal with that.
Thank you, Jeff. Yes, it's quite regularly in practice where if I see either get information from a request that's made to us from an investigator about a particular party or entity, or we get a request from a foreign counterpart organization about a particular series of transactions that might have been reported there. And we might not have necessarily received the report, but because we now have this information contained in the request that was made to us, we see there's something that needs to be followed up, and we start an analysis process based on the information and resources that the FIC can access in the government health databases, etc. So that would be one example. A very easy example would be where we would become aware of a criminal investigation that's ongoing through coverage in the media, etc. And we might start an analysis process to understand whether there's something we can contribute to that. So there are various circumstances in which the FIC would be presented with information which does not necessarily come out of a report that's made to the FIC.
Can I add something on GA? So this is partly of Chapter 3, that's your area, I think, James, to check that the corresponding section of the Act, as referred to here, is the correct section, right? Or rather, what the bill says about what in the Act is the correct section. I know you've done a lot of work. Presumably, all these lawyers and others who are here, technical experts, would have spotted these things. But it's also the obligation of Parliament to look at its Part 3 of Chapter 3, right? We discussed that last week on subcommittee, technical subcommittee meeting. Yes, David?
Again, that provision strikes me as broad. I mean, I would understand that if a counterpart institution, for example, provided you with a report about alleged or possible legal activity or even de facto legal activity, you'd be obliged to what would be in the national interest for you to look into that matter. But simply to have powers to, on the basis of the newspaper, initiate analysis or investigation, surely there should be some kind of legal test about a reasonable suspicion of criminal behavior.
I think that would make it very difficult to test whether the legal test is met or not, because the purpose of the analysis is to identify whether there is a suspicious activity or not, something that warrants further investigation or not. I think it needs to be borne in mind that the FIC doesn't carry out investigations. So if we find information that confirms that there is suspicious activity happening that warrants an investigation, we then have to just discard our responsibility to make that information available to one of these other bodies that are listed in this clause or the previous clause. So if the FIC has to have some suspicion before we start an analysis process, it's very difficult to test whether we cross that bar, because the whole purpose of our analysis is to establish whether there's reason to be suspicious about a particular activity and then stop the process of spending the state resources on an investigative process. I think it also needs to be understood that this is done in the context of a broader framework of legislation that gathers intelligence gathered. So the FIC doesn't have the authority to gather intelligence, but that's dealt with under legislation that deals with intelligence structures of the state. So the FIC may start as analysis based on information that public and generally available, but we can't go and sort of undercover search for information, gather information, and because that's a different responsibility that's not part of the FIC's function.
All right, can we go on? B, we said here that the informed advisor will cooperate with all these entities. Now, if I'm correct, have we allowed for an extension of this list? in some way. Because you might want to add that into Giovanna.
Jameson, at the moment, if the bill is passed with this amendment, then this list will be fixed. There won't be the next opportunity to add or subtract to this list would be another amendment to the FIFAT. So there isn't a sort of an interim process.
The minister to, after an appropriate consulting and consultation process, to add. What's the problem with that? Is it some legal or constitutional issue? Or some policy issue?
There's not a legal issue with that. I think the only policy issue would be that if one takes a point of view that the sharing of this information doesn't have some measure of infringement on somebody's privacy, because it's normally private confidential information that's shared by the FIC with another body, but where that person who's affected by that information is not necessarily part of that process. So from a policy point of view, if the legislator wants to maintain control over that, then one would limit it to this list that's provided by Parliament. If there's a more flexible approach to that, from a policy point of view, then the minister as an executive would be allowed to stand that list or subtract from it.
We allow the latitude to the minister. I don't like it personally, but there's some instances where, you know, the battle against crime is so overwhelmingly necessary. And given the way the financial sector keeps changing, I don't know what the minister is. Shouldn't we provide for the minister to be able, in effect, the clause above as well, to have some latitude? You can't just do it as you can't just do it. There have to be consultants and so on. Presumably also, if the organization identified to be added is not reasonably consistent with the fair and the bill as a whole, I think it's not everything else. The minister can just report on that.
Why are you laughing out on me seriously? Don't listen to this endless discussion. This offers thing out. We want you to know your answers. It's hot, please. And we're going to finish at 3. You've got to pass 3 leaders because I have to be elsewhere as well.
Jim, I have time, which certainly must be given the minister discretion, and I have an appetite to, in fact, sort of narrow this.
No, let the crime become aggressive, and then you'll blame the minority party and the government. What? Sorry? Yeah, needless to say. Yeah. Kikilani, what did you say, my sister?
Oh, I'm
with
James.
Right.
Jacob.
No, I'm fine. Sir, I don't think it's a, and I say that as a closed list, because when we're dealing with domestic problem and influential person. It means an individual, blah, 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 a prominent public function. Within the Republic, there's a prominent public function, including that of. Said I'm saying it could in the end be a chairperson of a committee. But see, that list is including all of those, but I would rather
say, but we are looking at those three, eh? I think there was only we need to concur with the old man's day. He was lost because he came 10 minutes late. Joseph, discuss with me yourself who's coming at what time. See, like, after Alf comes, he expects me to summarize to him. What do you mean? David does the same. Each of them doesn't reflect the party position, they reflect the individual position. So we have a problem there, that party is severely divided.
Right.
There's two people there and they have three people. If you have for now it is possible, there are two people in the party caucus, in committee, yet they have three streams of division. Exactly. Okay, so, look, I don't have to dive into this problem. How do we do it or we don't? I tend to say we should do it. Let's come back to this. So we put this as 3. We have adopted it, right? All right, let's go to the next one.
Thank you, Chair. The next one is clause 4 at the bottom of page 6.
I think your point, Chair, this would be, if I understand your categorization,
not except 2.
Because we have a difficulty with this broad definition. So we can...
Yeah, we're not accepting as it is. Yeah. This guy is still, what do you do this one? Can you give us a chain?
Other Act by deleting subsection 3, subsection 2. It's connected to that ESJ. It's a consequential amendment. Section 6 deals with the appointment of the director by the minister, and the minister must concurrently consult with his council. Now, council is abolished in this consequential.
He's so grudging and reluctant to even to, he feels that they lose hope. So if anybody cared what the DA's position on the CMLEC. Now, what is the CMLEC? I'm not going to be able to tell you what it stands for. But anyway, I don't care, they do know, because the researchers have done work for them. Unlike Jay, I have nobody to help when Alice was not in a good mood. He's in a good mood today. They were not even very helpful. Advocate Jay is very helpful. Thanks, guys. Five, six.
Thank you, Chair. The end is clause 2, clause 5, top page 7. And clause 6 is a consequential amendment for that. Flows from other amendments to change the heading by adding the reference to the unitations measures that are included in the chapter. And clause 7 is also an amendment of the heading to the first part of the chapter, which can now go beyond just identification of science to reference the religion. And the next substantive clause, I think, is clause 8, which is the new section of the FIC Act, section 20A. Which sets the principle that institutions would not deal with anonymous clients or clients acting under an apparent false or fictitious name. So the principle is that the institution would always at least know who they're dealing with as a customer. As a general principle.
This clause 8 has been written in the poll. You're going to amend it to take into account customers' concerns. Would that be correct?
Yes, I think if we, in the context of this morning's discussion with CASA, if there is and the current exemptions, that exemption would then have to reference this clause, say in these particular cases, the minister against CASA or the CASA member institutions or institutions of a particular class.
Covered in the original act, which is the minister made it today. So they're happy with it.
Yes, suggestion. I think that's on the basis that currently Qatar members or cleaners in general have an exemption that the NASDAQ granted in the market.
All right, it's there
already, but that is one statement that we adjust from here.
Now, as part of it, we also have to do our job. So, to decide whether you know where they apply, and maybe you can write a small text, see what you're going to do, and then we'll say, this is our understanding. Right. So, we can all use our comments. Although, ultimately, there's nothing we can do, because a report, a promise you make to Parliament, I don't know if Mr. Jenkins, what happened in that situation, let's say in theory, I'm not saying they're going to do it, that the institutionalized, the minister is understood by the Parliament, will regulate in a particular way. Let's get an exemption for CASA from a single transaction. Right? Then, they say they're going to do it, and then the minister says, no, I'm not doing it. Parliament gives nothing about it, even if it's in its report that says that's our understanding. Is that correct? You understand my question?
Parliament and Chinese law, do you stick to the promise that the minister made then?
No, yeah, that means we have to actually
propose
and so on. Yeah. But am I right? But actually, there's nothing we can do beyond what you're saying. Short of what you're saying, we'll follow. Yeah, okay, fine.
But I want to add that a commitment made by the executive to a member of the public or institution.
Yeah, obviously, Dumasani and Advocate Jenkins, we will sit together with the committee secretary, and before we come to the final stage, we will have a meeting, go through it and check that everything we said appears in the text that we bring to the submission. Right, over to you.
Chairman, I think the question that you were asking, I thought your question was asking, is we hear FIC and National Treasury saying that the minister will use his or her discretion that exists in the Act. But if the minister says, no, I'm not going to, then the negotiations and discussions with CASA serve no purpose. And there's nothing we can do about it.
Thank you.
Okay, point is going to raise here. So are we accepting that that is it? Yes, Elf?
Mr. Chairman, sorry, it's kind of, here again, we, when an accountable institution engages with a prospective client, I think, what's the problem? Mr. Chairman, it was raised as an issue with prospective clients. Someone walks in and then walks out, but you've got to do FICA before you even do anything.
I think we addressed this the last time. You were not here, viewed and reported to you. I think it was addressed. I can't recall what was the plan. Yeah, it was addressed.
Mr. Chairman, I've explained that the intention with the reference to prospective clients is not necessarily to deal with anybody that walks into the institution, but somebody with the process of transacting or opening an account or forming a relationship or providing a policy or whatever, the nature of the business is has started. In other words, where the institution agrees that they will do business with this customer, but they have fully completed the identification process and all the verification that they might want to do. Now, from our perspective, it's important that the institution stops the process of the identification and verifying what they need to verify about the customer before they actually conclude the transaction or actually start engaging and doing business with the customer. In other words, exchanging money, etc. For one reason, that process in itself is the institution information they might require to understand what the risk and to properly classify the profile of the customer that determines what is it that they need to know about the customer. But secondly, also, what to expect of the customer when they start interacting, and whether that pattern of transaction that they will see with the customer actually matches with the information that they obtain from the customer. If the institution decides that they're not interested in this customer's business, or the customers decide they're not interested, they can inquire if it's what's interest rate on fixed deposit, and the answer is 5%, that's too low. First of all, there's no need for the institution to start an education process because they've not actually decided whether they're going to engage in a relationship or not. I think that the final point, currently there's a requirement under in the injunctions of the under the FRC Act that says, currently the FRC Act says you may not do business with a customer unless you identify, verify. So it's actually much more strict than this provision at the moment. And there's an exemption currently that says under the FRC Act, which the Minister has granted, that says you may start engaging with the customer, but you must complete your verification process before you start doing business with the customer. So we're trying a different way of achieving that sort of result.
Fine, can we move on to accepting the call, sir? Sorry. Who's 10 now, is that right? Is that right, Peter? Sorry? Oh, somebody's going to hand up.
I beg your pardon, Mr. Chair. On previous thought, the source, as we understand it, will be discussed at the workshop for Basel tomorrow. And from Basel's perspective, we ask that extend over until we have the opportunity to discuss the clause and its impact, please. Thank you.
The next one is clause 10.
Thank you, Chair. Clause 10 introduces a new element in the FRC Act. It inserts a new section 21A. In the FRC Act, which is not something that's not currently covered in Act as it's currently worded. And this is where the obligations to understand the relationship with the customer goes further than just the identification of the customer and obtaining additional information on the nature of the customer and the customer's business that the institution would require to understand how the customer is going to transact in the future with the business. This only applies in the context where this relationship is formed. This cannot apply where you do a single transaction because you don't have this long-term view in where you perform a transaction with the customer. The section, makes it clear that the institution does this in accordance with the way it applies in risk management programs. So what the purpose of the relationship and the source of the funds that would be used is information which the institution takes at face value from the customer. So there's no obligation in this, this clause for the institution then to go and independently verify that information once it's obtained from the customer. But the point is not here to find out what the true source of funds is, to get something from the customer on record where they say this is how I'm going to transact, and then check whether the customer's subsequent behavior actually aligns with it and corresponds with what the customer gave the institution at the beginning of the relationship.
Any comments here? Fine, shall we go in? Something else to ask you. See, if you look in the one sense, the nature of the business relationship concerns, the B said, the intended purpose of the business relationship concerns. Is there not overlap in A and B? Or are they quite distinct things? Or a little different? And the other question I want to ask you is the following way. I don't know why I put it here late last week, last Monday night, when we meet on Tuesday. I don't know why I put this here. See, but refuges are formed in this course of business related concerns are consistent. How are you going to tell this? Oh, is he okay? It's not different. I can't even walk with half. Can you tell me what's the real difference, meaningful difference in A and B?
Gibson, these three paragraphs will probably differ depending on what type of institution is dealing with the customer. In a banking context, the nature of the relationship probably be whether it's an investment loan, a traditional account. So that's what the relationship is about. The purpose would be what is the person intending to do with funding a small business for it. But that would vary depending on whether you're talking about insurance banking or whatever.
Next clause, please.
Yeah, the next clause deals with beneficial ownership of your
person. Yeah, that's one of the
key issues that you have to jump on. Still with clause 10, the next section that's inserted in there, if I see that, is all that new concept on ongoing due diligence. There's more inserted in section 21C. To some extent, this is also related to the respect approach discussion, but I think just to explain what this is about, once the business relationship is formed with the customer, the institution, different periods needs to revisit that relationship with the customer to understand whether the information they have about the customer is still accurate and whether their view of the risk the customer presented is still accurate or circumstances might have changed. So that's what intended to be achieved with this ongoing due diligence. And also to track whether the customer's behavior seems suspicious or anomalous, depending on the information the institution gathered and under clause we just discussed previously. How frequently and with what intensity the institution does this, again, needs to be determined by the institution itself in terms of its risk management program. So whether it's done annually or every 3 years or 6 months, is something for the institution to decide in relation to the particular type of customer they're dealing.
I just want to ask you, let's take Roman numeral 2, right under 8. It says the background and purpose of all complex, unusual, large transactions and all unusual events which have no errand business. Now, there's complex, unusual, and apparent. How do you determine these things? What criteria?
Jefferson, this wording is actually taken from the FATF Foundation International Standard, but where we currently apply to the FATF is in our Section 29 of the Act, which is the obligation on institutions to report suspicious or unusual transactions. There's a specific section, a subsection there that says institutions must report a transaction which has no apparent lawful or business purpose. So where you can't see what is the business purpose that the customer wants to achieve with this, transaction doesn't seem to make sense in terms of making a profit or avoiding a loss or achieving a payment on a settlement this is also one of the things that relates to the risk-based approach, is explaining how this applies in the context of the risk-based approach and discussing work. So the large understanding of the implications of this. In the context of CASA, I think the discussion around this has been in the context of understanding that most of their business is one-off transaction business. So this sort of clause can't apply. There's no legal business purpose to gain in some entertainment. So they won't apply to the business.
You mean defer processing the clause beyond what we just said, right? From the committee side, have we got any responses to National Treasury's responses on 21C? Fine, so we leave you to come back to us with what you've come up with and decide then what our views are on this. Okay, the next one is doubt about veracity of previously obtained information. We're looking at that pretty quickly.
Thank you, Chair. This is also one of the clauses that we discussed with about. I think just to explain that the bottom line principle is if you can't do, you can't identify them, you can't do this for them. And I think that's a discussion that
you have. Alright, it's the inability. Sorry, I was a bit lost here. Doubts about veracity. Then we go to inability to conduct customer due diligence.
And I think this is the same principle where, like I said, if you can't establish the information of the customer, then that the act wouldn't allow the execution to the business with it.
So we defer this as well. Okay. 21F, foreign prominent public.
And 21F, G, and H deal with the prominent persons, which is also one of the things I think in the discussion, but these are the substantive sections where the definitions we discussed earlier would be aligned.
Yeah. All right, let's go to page 11. Obligation to keep customer due diligence records, clause 11.
Clauses 11 and 12 work together. They, in the current FIC Act, there's one section 22 that deals with record keeping obligations, and it lumps together all the types of records that institutions have to keep about customers, about transactions, and so forth. So clause 11 and 12, we're proposing to split the obligation on record keeping between the information about customer that the institution needs to have, that's clause 11, which will amend section 22, and the information about the transaction and the behavior and the patterns that the institution needs to have, and that will be clause 12. That will be a new section 22A that's inserted. Because the due diligence requirements in the previous clauses that we've discussed will change, and there will be additional information which the institution will obtain through the due diligence process. There's also been a corresponding change needed to reflect the additional information in the record keeping obligations. I think on clause 12, one of the issues that will require more verification for institutions is in section 2, paragraph E, which refers to business correspondence. And this is again something that comes from the international standard where around the management of a relationship with a customer, there's often also correspondence and not necessarily related to specific transactions. For instance, where changes in the nature of the relationship might happen, where that sort of information also needs to be part of the records that the institution keeps about their business relationship. We can't be more specific about what business correspondence is because there's different significance between different types of institutions. And for instance, in the insurance industry, it might be about the change of a beneficiary to a policy, which the policyholder informs the institution about. That's what the institution doesn't necessarily know the beneficiary, or the verified beneficiary's identity at the time when the change happens, but at least they need to keep a record of the fact that the policyholder has instructed them that this policy is now due to somebody else. So those are the things I think would for in a banking company to be something different again on the management of the account. But that's the one issue that we, a lot of comments were received for more clarification about this, which corresponds to meeting now for why this obligation. Is that any sense?
So 11 and 12 are fine, right? But the problem with 12 is that the casinos are saying they do not keep deposits in this account. But here, this doesn't apply anymore, right? They're concerned. Causes.
No, their concern was about the records they were they were concerned that they would have to keep a record of every patient person, and we indicated that it would not be required.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand the question of when you go and cash in chips, buy chips, and so on. But I walk in with 10,000 rand with 5 rand coins. I go to the slot machine. I'm putting money in the machine, but there's no record of that transaction.
Chief, I think this is in the context of both discussing guidance and the exemption, the current existing exemption for the casino industry that expecting further information from the casino industry. From our discussion we had with them last week, the explanation of the operation of the casino has been that, well, for both of our members anyway, which covers 99% of casinos in South Africa, they're moving to a cashless process of gambling. So even if one plays on a gamble on a slot machine, one would have to buy tokens or load a pre-value, store value card, which would get from a cash desk and then go insert the card in a slot machine and gamble until the value is used up and then go back and reload the card. So they have what they call a day visitor card, which they issue to do sort of the casual walking gamblers. For the machines that don't work with a card system, they buy tokens of some sort. We're not exactly at this stage sure what the extent is of machines where you can physically gamble with loads and coins. We don't have to exchange your money. But I think that's one of the things we will have to deal with in the exemption process, because if there is that part of the business all fairly prevalent, then one would have to set the minimum values for, and then that would be captured by the low value transactions. From the explanation from COSA in our meeting is that management of cash is a huge risk and a problem for the casino, so they want to centralize the points where cash is collected and where they can keep control over the counting and so on as strict as possible.
Yeah, can I suggest something on practical issues, right? It has been simple around the firstly, the management committee. But let's start with this. See, we need to have a discussion with your parliamentary liaison and also about how we make more productive use of our time, so that you don't fly up all of you from Swanee, from your ability here, and then we don't have enough hours with you. So I will sit with Cindy, sit with the two committee secretaries and plan a bit better. Unfortunately, we've been too ambitious. Especially what we thought we had to do, we don't have to do now. Meet that constituency. Secondly, what one forgets as a chair is that there's so many other meetings that come up right now. You know, as we go towards summer preparatory meetings, and you don't work up how much you get called off those meetings. So I think we'll stop here. We haven't done that. We haven't done as well as I was hoping. There's partly us as a committee. We need to get a firmer commitment. I also think that some issues, once we've had a discussion, I don't mean to detain the entire committee. We can sit in a subcommittee, process issues, bring them here for options on which we must make decisions. I will talk in fact meeting now. We can have a management committee meeting of the committee next week. Around 13:15, I think there are sort of debates on 13:15 to 13:55 next Tuesday. In the first instance, I'm meeting the opposition members now to discuss aspects of that. So once we've had our management committee meeting next week, I have raised with the research unit, the chief of the office, and I'm going to have a meeting which I had about PPO. Because we have no content at all. We also have to know what resources and support services we have. So that we ourselves, also, we underestimated how much time you need for discussions with the stakeholders. So what you have done is very good. May I take this opportunity? Cindy, you know, you're thanking you. As a treasury, you've done very well.
to really appreciate it. From our side, we need to pull our act together better. I will confer with the study group and so on. So I think for now, we've done what we can. What I would like members to think about is that we did publications and in future, like for example, meeting Basa on Thursday. Next week is Sharana. I think we must drop the FSR and focus on this program. So we restructure our program. But let me confer with the opposition parties on the program, the elements of the program. So what I'm saying is, you realize also that we can approach the powers that be to exempt us from sittings of the House, which we tried to do last year. So maybe it will try to bring fewer times to Cape Town, but a longer period. But then there are also things like, I can't decide this, the House Chair, the Chief of Staff, and all, they have a say on the issue. So there's too many ponderables at the moment on how we process the bill. But what you can be sure of, this committee will deliver on the deadline that we agreed on. How we do it is something we'll come back to. So I want to thank you very, very much. I also know that people are flying in from Johannesburg and Pretoria and wherever you come from. But that is something we try to accommodate you. But we have to shape our program. Do you think any parliament in the world you can, after public hearings, speak the way you do? I don't know any other parliament. A little bit Sweden. No. So you're getting a lot of latitude here. But you also have to be wary and cautious, because you're not called to legislating, right? So you can have your say, and then we've heard you, and that's that. So what we're saying is, we will be clearer after next year's management committee meeting where we are going, and I will confer also with the House Chair to find out what attitude we've got about sitting. I know it's a problem also, because the minority parties will say they can't do all these things anyway. So these issues are not something I have final say on. I'll come with proposals to the management committee next year. Because we've got your insurance bill, we've got this bill, we made a carbon tax bill, let them know, we made it, and we've got also the FSR bill, 224 piece, sorry, regional revenue bill, and so on. So really, I would like to persuade the minister to go slow, until we get the staff we need support. I'm saying this because I don't share with you how much I have to outside the ministers. I've got like 25, 30 centers as opposed to respond to where I'm going to do that. So in short, we will hopefully within 3 weeks have a clear idea of our resources and capacity that will shape our program. Okay? And thank you very much. Can we meet very quickly at the end? Thank you all. See you whenever. Association, what are the moves here now? Because all these bills, in finance, we have moved to Cape Town. We save you a lot of money. Function from here. Because all the bills are open.